Welcome to the Side Hustle Project, a podcast where we explore the nitty-gritty details behind what it takes to start and grow a profitable side hustle. I'm your host, Ryan Robinson, and in this podcast, I'm bringing you interviews with entrepreneurs, best-selling authors, CEOs, investors, and people just like you who are building and profiting from interesting side hustles. In today's episode, we're talking to John Morrow, the legendary blogger behind the massively popular site Smart Blogger that reaches an audience of more than 100,000 email subscribers and generates well over $100,000 in monthly revenue. John has one of the most incredible personal stories I've ever come across. Born with a form of muscular dystrophy called spinal muscular atrophy, John spent the vast majority of his adult life almost completely paralyzed, save for being able to move his eyes and lips, which actually enables him to write through speech recognition technology. Now, despite having a very different childhood than most, John was never one to shy away from hard work, and by the time he was 20, John had already built and sold his first website. He landed a job after that as an editor at Copyblogger, one of the world's most popular blogs, and he eventually launched his own blog that go on to become SmartBlogger. Today, as John puts it, he's become a millionaire all from his wheelchair. He's written articles that reach more than 5 million readers, he regularly gets hundreds of thousands of shares on his content, and he's launched several premium online courses that power the core of his business. In this episode, John and I talk about how he's built a blog that generates over $1 million in annual revenue from various different income sources. We dive deep into the back end of his business, from generating affiliate revenue to getting your first 10,000 readers, building an email list of engaged subscribers, how to launch an online course that earns tens of thousands of dollars straight out the gate, and more. We dig into John's personal writing process, how he makes time to regularly write throughout his busy schedule, his most effective traffic driving strategy. We talk about his thoughts on perseverance, dedication, and the power of having the right mindset and discipline when it comes to building your own business. All of this and so much more. As always, you can find everything we mentioned in today's episode in the show notes at ryrob.com/podcast. That's spelled ryrob.com/podcast. Let's get into today's incredibly motivating interview with John Morrow. John, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
It is such an honor to be speaking with you. You're someone that I have followed online for what seems like the better part of a decade. And I remember first stumbling across your content way back before it was actually under the Smart Blogger label. So back in those days, your site was called Boost Blog Traffic, right?
That's correct. Yeah.
What year did you originally launch Boost Blog Traffic?
It was 2010. Yeah, okay. March of 2010. I remember because it was just a couple of months after I moved to Mexico for 3 years. So yeah, we're closing in on the decade, not too far away.
All right. Do you remember what your original motivation was for launching Boost Blog Traffic back in the day?
My motivation was I'd helped run and build two other really big blogs, Copyblogger and Kissmetrics, and I'd seen what I was able to do on the for other companies, and I'd also been doing a lot of consulting work with agencies working with big brands, and the big burning question in my mind is, I'm doing this for everyone else and making them rich. Why don't I do it for myself? And so finally, I just decided to make it happen. And it worked.
Yeah. Well, it was a great question to ask. I'm glad you asked yourself that one.
Yeah. And, you know, I mean, it started a journey becoming an entrepreneur. I mean, I'd started businesses before that. But this has definitely been my longest one. And it's one that I feel totally at home in and don't plan to really ever stop. So yeah, it's been great to me.
Do you remember the very first business or side project, entrepreneurial endeavor, whatever you want to call it, that you got into?
I mean, if you want to go all the way back, it would be I used to make things out of popsicle sticks with my friends and go sell them door to door. Like literally ring the doorbell. So now in retrospect, it's kind of evil because you got this little kid in a wheelchair with popsicle stick things trying to sell them. And like, no one ever said no, because you'd feel horribly guilty. Like, they go find the money to buy one thing or something. So yeah, growing up, I was always selling something to the poor neighbors. And I wasn't one of those passive kids that have like a lemonade stand and wait for them to approach either. I was door to door, you know, you're going to tell me no if you don't want to buy from me. So that was the first. I mean, from there, I was a video game developer. I started a company there. I was a software developer. I started a company there. I got into real estate, started a company there. So yeah, I've been an entrepreneur pretty much all my life.
Yeah, you've been a busy guy. So how did you find yourself eventually working with, you know, you mentioned Kissmetrics, Copyblogger. These were huge, even early names kind of in the world of blogging. And honestly, like to pull a common thread out, teaching people how to be better writers, better marketers. And those are kind of things that I associate with you as well. So how did you eventually kind of find yourself going into this this avenue?
So, I mean, there was a lot of serendipity. I'd been tinkering around with blogs for years because I've always enjoyed writing ever since I was like 5 years old. I wrote like stories. It was something that like I didn't just do for school. I did it for fun. And I was always looking for a way to put that passion into effect in a way that would pay the bills and could never find it. And so I tinker around on the side. Like when I was in real estate for 3 years, I had a real estate blog where I would post stuff. And it was somewhat successful. But when the real estate market crashed and we had the Great Recession, which started in 2007, 2008, somewhere in there, because I was relatively involved, I mean, high up on the real estate industry, like talking to CEOs of banks and things, I knew it was going to be a long time before the market recovered. And so what I decided to do was, all right, this is the time to stop messing around with real estate and see if you can make something out of this. So at first I started blogging about personal finance, and I launched the blog, and it already had, within 60 days, it was up to 1,000 visitors a day of organic traffic. And it got nominated. It was like for a Webby Award or something for like the best personal finance blog. Best new personal finance blog, I think it was. I didn't win, but it was nominated. And at that point, like, I didn't have a job. I didn't have an income. So a guy offered to buy it for $10,000. And at the same time, I got an offer to go work for Brian Clark over at Copyblogger. So those two things happened at once. So I sold the blog. And I went to work with Brian, and that's when my real education started. I learned 80-90% of what I know while I was working at Copyblogger. And Brian was a big time mentor for about 3 years.
Is that personal finance blog still alive, by the way, the person who bought it from you?
It is. It's like, I don't think anything has ever happened with it, but it's on moneymaking.com.
Okay.
Is the blog, and I think some of my old posts are still on there. Yeah. So anyone who's interested in history can go check it out.
Yeah. So John, getting kind of back on topic for what I had jotted down for here for you, you built Boost blog traffic. You built a list of over 13,000 email subscribers before you even actually published your first article. So how do you go about doing something like this? Because we have a lot of people here watching, listening, that are in the early days of their own blogging journey, and they would kill to have an audience already built in before they, you know, invest a ton of their time into content. So how do you start laying the foundation for that?
I mean, the way that I did it was there were a few different things. Number one, I wrote guest posts for big blogs with the audience I wanted. And so that was mainly Copy Blogger and Pro Blogger. And then I linked to a coming soon page that I even created a video trailer that was like a minute and a half long, like you would have for a movie. And then I had a place to put your email address below that, an opt-in box. And so I got people to subscribe off of the guest posts. But the other thing, no one had ever created a trailer before for a blog. So I like reached out to tell that story, almost like a PR type pitch to a lot of different places. And so I got subscribers from that. The other thing I did was I launched the lead magnet, the freebie that I was giving away for people that were going to opt into my list, was Headline Hacks. It was a collection of templates for the titles of your blog post. And I gave that away for free for 24 hours. And then I converted the page into an opt-in form. So
interesting.
I spread the word and got like all the big social media blogs to promote Headline Hacks, and got like 12,000 people to download it for free with no opt-in or anything. And then after that, when it switched over, I think the first day I got like 1,000. And then after that, it was 300 a day for a week or two, something like that. So I did that. And then because I saw Headlines were so successful, I did a deal for a little while that I could have pushed further and still wouldn't be necessarily a bad deal for me to do. And that I would do a webinar with no sales pitch, with a training on Headlines. But the deal was that I got to keep all of the webinar opt-ins. Mm-hmm. So, and I would tell them, you know, I'm not going to spam them or whatever. I would even send them an email after the webinar and say, I'm going to follow up with you and just give you more blogging advice. If you're done with this and you're not interested, here's the unsubscribe link. But I'd only get like five or 10% to unsubscribe, something like that. So I did that for Copy Blogger. I did it for AWeber, the email service provider.
Big brands.
Each time I did it, I got like 1,000 people. I mean, that was very successful. So for 30 or 60 days, that's what I was doing, is those types of things. And I wanted to make it like the biggest blog launch ever. And there were a couple of things that helped. I mean, so I just described the tactics, but that in itself, I don't think is what's super valuable. What's super valuable is, number one, I already had connections with big brands. Okay. Yeah. Because I'd been putting in the work writing for these sites for years. I was also the most popular guest writer and maybe the highest paid freelance writer in the world at the time. I was getting up to $5,000 per post. And the reason why is because, number one, I was really, really good at writing blog posts. And also, they got a lot of traffic. Mm-hmm. And so I think that really kind of exposes what the real secret is it's actually more about skill and connections than it is anything else. I mean, even today, like if I really want to push something, which doesn't happen that often, I'm not nearly as ambitious now that I'm in my 30s as I was when I was in my 20s. But if I really want to push something, like my friends on Facebook probably have like 50 million followers. So if I, and they would all happily share something from me. So, you know, I could reach out to those people and get a huge amount of traffic. So, I mean, building, regardless of what you're writing about, whether it's blogging or whatever, I think the two things to focus on early on, or three things really. Number one, if you're committed to blogging, focus on growing your skill as a blogger. Mm-hmm. Get really, really good. I mean, the reason why AWeber, a big company, wanted me to talk about headlines is I was really, really good at headlines. The way that I got really, really good at headlines, the first year I worked at Copyblogger, I wrote 100 headlines a day. So I wrote 36,000 headlines my first year. Okay? So I'm not saying you have to write 36,000 headlines, but there was a reason why I was good at it. It's not just that, you know, I have this miraculous ability. I'd really put a lot of work into what I was doing. And that's the other thing. Have some skill or superpower, for lack of a better word, that everyone in your space looks at you and goes, that's amazing. So like another example, I have a client right now who I'm helping getting started with blogging that she's got 12 kids and she's gotten them all through homeschool. She's been homeschooling for 35 years.
And she has time to start a blog?
And she runs a business at the same time. That's like a woman with a superpower, right? And it's something where every mom is automatically like, how are you doing all of that? Yeah. And she's happy to talk about it. And she can kind of just like break it all down with how she's done it. But I think one of the things that's underrated by a lot of people is the importance of developing a superpower. And it doesn't have to be anything enormous, but think about the things that you do that when people hear about them, they just go, wow. Mm-hmm. That I'd love to be able to do that. And to you, it probably seems simple. But whatever that is, develop it, become known for that, and then use that to make it to where when someone says, wow, I'd love to be able to do that, you say, well, you can come to my blog and subscribe, right? I'll teach you how to do that.
I'm glad that you framed it as superpower too, because I think it's one of those things where, you know, we just covered a lot. So I want to unpack this for 1 second for everyone. Sure. The tactics are one thing, right? You can read about tactics. You have tactics all over your blog, right? You freely teach people how to do very advanced things even. But when it comes down to it, you're using your own unique skills that you've built. You've invested tons and tons of time into building and relationships, right? In order to amplify the effectiveness of the tactics. So make sure that you're building your craft first and foremost and growing your skills.
Yeah. And I mean, just to give you, I mean, some of these numbers are insane. When I was getting $5,000 per post, my average traffic per post was 50,000 visitors, even to a brand new blog. Okay.
Within how many days?
Within 30 days.
That's pretty insane.
Yeah. Now, I don't know what my 30-day number is, but I do know my yearly number. My yearly number on new posts is 1 million visitors per post, 1 million new people to the blog. And where does that... I mean, that's an insane number, by the way. I mean, that like dwarfs...
I second that.
Yeah, I've never... I've been looking for someone that could come anywhere close to that. I mean, like, all of the other riders combined don't hit that number. Okay? So, and these are some of the best people that you can get riding for you. So, that's a superpower. Yeah. It's something that other people just look at it and say, I mean, that's just, like, amazing. I don't know how anyone could do that. And the bigger your superpower is and the more you can develop that, the more eager people will be to follow you, to listen to you, to buy your stuff, your courses, whatever it is. It's a really big deal. It's a really big deal.
Yeah. So John, fast forwarding today, we glossed over this at the beginning of the episode. You now run Smart Blogger with well over 100,000 email subscribers. I know $100,000 in monthly income plus. You've got a lot of very impressive metrics to back Smart Blogger. You've accomplished this, something that very few people have been able to do. Do you remember the first dollar that you earned from blogging? So going back, rewinding the clock, what was the very first thing that you sold from blogging?
First thing that I sold was I did an affiliate review of keyword research tools for Copyblogger. And I forget what the exact deal was. Instead of paying me, like, my deal with them was, like, I'll get half the money up to $5,000 a month or something. I forget. It was something like that. It never got to $5,000 a month, I don't think. But I remember it was at the end of the month, I got, like, $1,000 of affiliate checks. And, you know, every month after that for 2 years, I got checks off of those posts. And so I don't know how much it added up to me getting for those affiliate reviews, but in exchange for writing 5 or 7 reviews, I mean, I would guess I probably made at least $10,000, something like that. So that's kind of when I was hooked. Yeah.
Yeah. What would you say was your first product of your own? So course, book, or otherwise, that ended up kind of taking a home run success?
I mean, so I had one that was a flop first.
Let's hear about that first.
Yeah, I mean, I developed a course with Brian because I was really big at the time. So Brian Clark was the founder of Copyblogger. At the time, the biggest and most influential marketing blog in the world. I mean, like, rated and tracked by Ad Age and everything. We had over 3 million page views a month. It was a huge site. And I was really into partnerships at the time. So I worked out a deal with Brian Clark, the founder, that I would actually create a book on how to form partnerships. And like an ebook.
A partnership on partnerships.
Yep, exactly. and then I would do these interviews with all of these people who were famous for joint ventures at the time. We would package all of that together with an ebook and sell it for, I think it was $200, something like that. As a course. And we put it up for sale, and it was the worst selling course in Copyblogger history. Still made like 20 or 30 grand off of it. But I never stopped to consider whether anyone wanted a course on partnerships. And the answer to that question was no, not really. Everyone that bought the course that looked at it said, this is amazing. This is great. It's the best thing I've ever seen on this subject. But like most people didn't want it. And so that was a hard lesson learned, that you really had to figure out what people wanted first. And so my first big success was a course on guest blogging, which is still around. Mm-hmm. And guest blogging is where you write for these other big sites in exchange for a link back to your blog. And we've now had students published on pretty much every major site. I mean, Forbes, Covington Post, I think Success Mag, even like Harvard Business Review, and all kinds of different places. That course has been around for, yeah, like 8 years now. So total money that it's made, I don't know, but it's got to be seven figures by now.
Yeah. And this was actually going to be my next question for you. If you had to kind of tally up all the income that you guys have generated, your company has generated from blogging over the years, what would you give that figure?
Yeah, I tried to come to a rough guesstimate the other day, and it was over 5 million in the past 8 years.
Jeez.
So not bad. On the other hand, I mean, just to be totally transparent, the companies that I worked with before I started my own, I helped them make over 50 million. So
there's always a bigger, right?
It's kind of like, now a lot bigger piece of that pie went to me this time around because it's mine. And my lifestyle has certainly been better. I've gotten to travel all over. So I'm not complaining by any means. But yeah, I mean, it's a lot of money for a blog, but it is increasing. I mean, so we'll see if we can continue our pace. But for the past couple of months, we've closed in on like 200,000 a month. So if we can keep up that pace, eventually it will go to making, you know, if we can keep it up, it'll be like over 2 million a year the blog will make. So that number will eventually rise. Smart Blog is more popular, more profitable now than ever.
Looking under the hood then at that, you know, 200,000-ish a month almost that you guys are generating, what's the distribution like? So, you know, the big buckets of course sales, you know, books, affiliate income, consulting deals, what's weighted in which direction?
So one of the big things I've learned, and I've worked behind the scenes with a lot of bloggers and information product creators, and this one is always a big surprise to people. The most money, and especially the most profit, is generated off of the expensive things. So we have a course that's $1,000. That's, roughly this year, it's probably going to be over 50% of our income, just that one course. We have another one that we just launched like 2 months ago that's $10,000, and it's a group mastermind program, and that's already generated, I think, $110,000. Just without even a whole lot of effort. Those are big pieces of revenue. And I wouldn't be surprised if that becomes like a $500,000 a year earner every year going forward. Where the $1,000 course, I wouldn't be surprised if that's an even bigger chunk next year. It's the most popular course we've ever created. It's the expensive things. Now, a lot of people, they focus on the ebooks that were the, they're just threatened by these expensive prices. And I was too when I got started. You develop $7 things or $49 things or $200 things. And here's the weird thing. You don't actually make that much money off of those. But here's what you do see. The people who buy your thing for $10, they're much, much more likely to go buy your thing for $1,000 than someone who's never purchased from you before. So even though you don't make much money off of those small sales, they're still important because they're, I mean, I do the same thing. Like you go to a company and it seems interesting and seems promising, but you're like a little skeptical. So you say, well, let me buy your cheapest thing and just see what the experience is. See if I like it. See how you do. And then if that works out and you impress me, then yeah, maybe I'll go buy one of your more expensive things, right? It's just sort of human nature to do things that way. So the answer is you make the most money off the expensive things, but those expensive things sell much better, much, much better when you have, I mean, I think the people that spend $1,000 with us, I think it's about 70 or 80% have bought something that's like $10 beforehand. So yeah, there's a huge correlation there. So the answer is even though those cheap things don't make you as much money, I still think they're an important trust building mechanism to be able to get up and sell those things. Where people make a mistake, there's nothing wrong with an ebook or a $10 whatever. What the problem is when you don't have an expensive thing to follow up on the back of that. That's where you don't make any money. Ideally, you need both.
I love that. John, have you had any oh shit moments with Smart Blogger over the years? Any ideas, tactics, strategies, things that kind of ended up failing or even worse, blowing up in your...
Yeah. Yeah, I have. I've had a few. I mean, the worst one was I was having tremendous back pain, tremendous back problems, to the point where, like, I remember one time giving a webinar that, like, I halfway kind of like passed out on the webinar that I was doing because I was in so much pain. And I was having trouble working. I had a lot of employees that depended on me. And I remember I wasn't so much scared for myself. I was more scared that if this continues, I'm going to just have to like lay people off and just try to get through this. And I didn't want to do that. It's funny. I mean, 8 years into the business, we've never had anyone quit. Wow. We've had a few people like go to contractor status. We've had and like start working part time while they start their own thing and then eventually transition out. But as far as like disgruntled employee, like anyone mad or not, so there's never been anyone. And I think part of the reason why is because everyone who works with me is like my family and I treat them really well. And I'm also totally honest. And in general, they like working with us. So the idea of laying these people off was really, really bad. And I remember that one day, I mean, and I was so distracted just because of all the pain, that my bookkeeper called me up and said, John, there's not enough money in here to run payroll.
Oof.
And that was my oh shit moment. And I had to think of what I was going to do. And I ended up doing a sale. At the time, I was charging $1,000 an hour for consulting. And I did a sale where you could get an hour of my time for only $600. But it was only open for 24 hours. And in that 24 hours, we sold, I think it was $44,000 of consulting calls.
Ooh. So you booked out weeks worth of calls.
I was so miserable by the end of those calls, doing those consulting calls, but it helped us make payroll. I eventually kind of got back on track and started being able to work again. That was one of several that I've had. but thankfully, none in the past 18 months or so. Things have actually gotten really good. I mean,
knock on wood.
Yeah. I mean, for me, and this is a hard one to understand when you're not there. It took me a long time to transition from John, the really awesome superstar blogger, to CEO. John, the CEO, and John, the business owner. They're very different hats. And I think I had a lot of maturing to do as a person. And it was once I matured that those oh shit moments stopped happening. And I won't say there will never be another one, but my attitude is dramatically different as far as, you know, I treated the blog for years just like an ATM machine that I could take money out of. And I think that's what a lot of people dream of, is that you've got this thing generating cash and you can just go get money whenever you need it. But the thing is, when you treat a business that way, it doesn't really operate very well. And there are a lot of balls that get dropped. And there are a lot of opportunities that get missed. And when I started thinking of it as, all right, this is a real actual company. I'm going to be a real actual CEO. I'm going to surround myself by a real management team. I'm going to have planning meetings and all of those kinds of things. That's when all the craziness stopped. And it got much more stable. And my life got much more peaceful. I don't know. If you had told me that when I got started, I don't know if I would appreciate the value of that story. So I don't know if...
You have to experience it.
Yeah, if your listeners will really understand that, but... If I could urge you, one big mistake I made was just not treating my blog like a real business for far too long. Far too long.
Fair enough. So, John, we talked at the top of this show about building your writing process, right? So, becoming a better skilled writer, investing the time. But going on kind of a more tactical level with that, do you have any sort of hard and fast rules for, you should write this number of days per week? You should aim for this number of words when you sit down at the computer to write. Do you have any sort of process that you advise people on?
Yeah. So this is one where my thinking is a lot different than most people's. So I think saying, so this sounds like a different topic, but it's not. The blogging is a competitive sport. Okay.
I love that.
The rewards go to the people who are the best. If you really want to get, and you don't have to be, I would say I'm probably like top 10 or 20 in the world. You don't have to be that high. You've got to be like at least in the top 1%, right? You know, you take 100 bloggers, stick them in the room, you're the best one type of thing. So I think asking the question, how many days a week do I have to write? How much do I have to write? It's kind of akin to someone training for a marathon of the Olympics, asking his coach, well, how often should I run? How many minutes or miles a day should I run? The answer is the more you put in, the more you're going to get out. And the more you put in, the higher your likelihood of winning. But it's also not just about time. It's about practicing certain skill sets. So it's not only writing. You can be a brilliant writer and not get any traffic because you're writing about things no one cares about. I've seen it happen. So like one of the things that we make our students do now in our courses that's been very successful is we make them find an existing post that's already been successful and then to create a better version of it, their own version of it. So that way you're not guessing, is this something people are interested in? They obviously must be because look how popular this post is. What I see students doing the most with their writing and failing, number one, is writing about things that they care about, but the rest of the world doesn't. You've got to find the overlap between your passions and the rest of the world's passions. You can't ignore either side. You have to have the overlap between those two. So learning how to do research is a skill that you have to acquire. And the better you are at that, the more popular your content will be. The same thing goes for the structure or frameworks of content. So like there are how-to posts, how to make $1 million in blogging. There are list posts, 11 ways to make money blogging, right? We've all seen these structures, but you probably haven't stopped and recognized that it's important. The reality is, so let's say you're going to sit down. If you sat down for, and let's say you were going to write 500 words a day and you wrote it in your journal, that would be a little bit of a benefit. But if you sat down and you said, I'm going to write 500 words a day of only list posts that I've researched and that are based on other popular list posts. Okay. Mm-hmm. When you do that, you will see a huge acceleration in not only the amount of traffic you get, but the amount that you learn in the process. So it's not just about, I mean, yes, the amount of time you put in matters, but also the relevant skill sets are research, frameworks, and networking, outreach.
The relationships.
You've got to get good at all three of those things. And so the more time you spend learning those things, the faster you'll improve.
I love it. Well, John, I want to ask you a few of my frequently asked questions. Sure. I designed them to be intentionally short on my end. Your responses don't have to be equally so. You know, what kinds of sacrifices do you feel you've had to make over the years in order to put enough time and effort into your business?
I've sacrificed almost everything. At certain times in my life, I'm sacrificing less now than I was when I was building my business. I'm finally to the point where the business more works for me than I work for the business, which took me a long time to get here. But at different times in my life, I've sacrificed my health. I've sacrificed social life. I've always been a workaholic. I work 7 days a week. I'm not even happy unless I'm working 7 days a week. It's the weird thing. People like say, John, take a vacation. And I'm like, no, why would I want to do that? Because I like what I'm doing. I'm miserable on vacations. So I live a life of extremes for the most part. There are things I have not ever sacrificed. I've never sacrificed my integrity. I've never sacrificed my family. And I've never sacrificed my own dreams, ever. Those three things I'm very proud of. The rest of it, I sacrificed some things. But if you ask me, I'd probably do it again. Probably do it again.
That's a good answer. What would be your number one?
So I'm trying to pick between a few things here. I'd say one of which is actually investing into a real team. A lot of businesses, a lot of blogs, I mean, any sort of online lifestyle business, a lot of them run off of this sort of motley crew of outsourcers. Where, you know, you have a few part-time people doing this and doing that. And I have employees that, I mean, I have one employee now that's been with me since the first day. Marsha, she's still here. And I have other, multiple other employees that have been with me years. And is that more expensive? Yes, it is. But the enormous benefit is they know exactly how everything is supposed to be done. They also have a sense of ownership in the company and home, that this is my home and I want things to be right. And so the amount of oversight that is required is dramatically less. The profit is dramatically higher for each of those people. So it's a higher investment, but it's a much higher reward. And the amount of stress that it relieves of knowing you have people around who are committed to you over the long haul and that are really genuinely doing a good job at what they do, and it's going to stay that way. The sense of peace that you get from that as an entrepreneur is just something that you can't put a price tag on. It's a beautiful thing.
I love it. All right. Well, John, I cannot thank you enough for joining us here today. Can you steer everyone watching, listening to over where they can go and learn more about you?
Sure. I mean, head over to smartblogger.com, or if you want to check out my new pet project, unstoppable.me, sort of a hobby project that I've been tinkering with here and there. But SmartBlogger is my main place, and lots of blogging advice over there for you.
Beautiful. All right. Well, John, thank you again.
Yeah, man. Thanks for having me.
If you enjoyed this episode of The Side Hustle Project, I would love your support. Head on over to the Apple Podcasts app and give us a rating. And as always, you can catch every episode of The Side Hustle Project on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, and wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for tuning in.